in this region, and there are I think over 300 companies in Subang as of this year. It's become quite it's becoming a semi-prominent industrial zone within the last two decades after spending a long time as an agrarian community. And in terms of the factory as a whole, I would just say it is a very run-of-the-mill Indonesian garment factory. But of course, the reason that it bears a second look is because of the connection to a very specific brand that is built on women in the workplace. So I think it's important to look at the supply chain of a brand that positions itself in that way.
To Indonesia about her Guardian investigation revealed reality of life working in an Ivanka Trump clothing factory. We'll link to that at democracynow.org. All Ivanka Trump brand apparel are made abroad. President Trump declared this week Made in America Week. And that does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Promised Land July 24th at 6:30 p.m. at the Rivergate Church in Portland. Promised Land is a social justice documentary that follows two tribes in the Pacific Northwest, the Duwamish and the Chinook, as they fight for restoration of treaty rights that have long since been denied. The film examines the way that government and society still look at tribal sovereignty. Again, that's a screening of the documentary film Promised Land, July 24th at 6:30 p.m. at the Rivergate Church, 7634 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, July 22nd and 23rd, from noon to 6 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space in Portland. The Portland Zine Symposium will feature Skillshare workshops, panels, and unique tapers focusing on self-publishing, social justice, expression, and more. Again, that's the 17th Annual Portland Zine Symposium, July 22nd and 23rd, from noon to 6 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program has been made possible by KBOO members and support from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, The Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as KBOO Night every second Tuesday. Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast 26th and Clinton in Portland. Schedule and info at 503-238-5588 or at cstpdx.com. Coming up next is your Friday KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Port of Portland wants to spend $1.3 billion on Portland's airport.
Arbitration clauses in financial contracts are with us once again, if Congress gets its way.
Portland schools are looking for a name change.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 21st, 2017. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. The Centennial School District is on Portland's outer southeast edge and also serves some of western Gresham. Not long ago, according to the Oregonian, the district students were about 84% white. Now, with an influx of African-American families displaced from north and northeast Portland's gentrification, as well as an increase in Latinx families in the area, the district is more than 55% non-white. Along with the changing demographics have come questions about some of the schools in the districts with racially insensitive names. Now Centennial District Superintendent Paul Coakley says that three elementary schools, Lynch Meadows, Lynch View, and Lynch Wood, will be renamed ahead of the upcoming school year. The schools were named after a family that donated land, but Coakley says the word lynch used as a verb is commonly associated with racial violence and has prompted concerned questions from parents of non-white students. The name change was agreed upon at the mostly white school board's last meeting in mid-July and will be finalized with a formal resolution at the board's August 9th meeting. Lynch mob violence is generally associated with the American South, but Oregon too has a submerged history of lynching, including the 1902 hanging of a black man in Coos Bay. The threat of lynching, especially during the Ku Klux Klan years of the 20s and 30s, also played a key role in Oregon's racist housing practices.
The Port of Portland plans to spend $1.3 billion on improvements and upgrades to Portland International Airport. The money will be spent on improvements to security and to address the needs of rapidly increasing numbers of travelers. The airlines using PDX will foot the bill, and they will vote on the project in the fall. Work on the improvements is slated to begin in the year 2020 and will take about 5 years.
Earlier this year, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB, instituted a rule that clamps down on the use of so-called arbitration clauses in consumer financial contracts. Arbitration clauses prevent consumers from banding together in class action lawsuits. Instead, they typically mandate that disputes be resolved one-on-one outside of the courts using an independent arbitrator, often chosen by the financial institution. Now, both houses of Congress are moving to overturn the rule using the Congressional Review Act, or CRA. The CRA and the anti-regulatory abilities it gives Congress is a favorite tool of the current president. Indeed, bills stemming from Congress's use of the CRA to overturn regulations make up the majority of the few bills signed into law by the president since January. For more on what this rule and its impending repeal means for the average citizen, KABU reporter Sam Bowman spoke with Melissa Stegman, Senior Policy Counsel with the Center for Responsible Lending in Washington, D.C.
Melissa, thank you so much for talking to me today. Can you just give me a little overview of what an arbitration clause is and how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was trying to stop the harm that those clauses can do to consumers?
Sure. So imagine signing up for a credit card or any other financial product in the contract you have to sign. Most likely in that contract buried in the fine print is a forced arbitration clause. And these clauses take away your right to go to court if a company violates the law. So if a dispute arises and you want to challenge the company's actions, you're forced into a secretive arbitration process. It's rigged in the company's favor. And you're going to be bound by a decision made by a private individual rather than a judge or jury with generally no rights of appeal. And these clauses also generally ban consumers from joining together in class action lawsuits. And because it's usually too expensive for consumers with small dollar disputes to pursue individual claims in arbitration, and it's not usually worth the time and effort to, for instance, challenge an unfair $30 fee, but maybe that financial company has been committing the same practice to millions of other people, and without the ability to pursue claims in a class action lawsuit, these abuses would never see the light of day. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is our main watchdog on Wall Street, they recently have finalized a consumer protection rule that restricts forced arbitration in consumer financial contracts. And their rule allows consumers to band together to challenge unfair financial practices.
And so would the CFPB's rule overrule arbitration clauses that are already in effect, or does it just prevent future ones?
Well, the rule would go into effect in the future. It would have an effective date after the rule. It would take longer for the rule to go into effect. So it's not retroactive, but it would be for future contracts.
Just to kind of put some flesh and bone on this for our listeners, the one recent example that your group pointed out and others have too is the Wells Fargo scandal that has been unfolding over the past year, with numerous fraudulent accounts opened and other malfeasance. Can you give us a little explanation of how arbitration clauses played into that?
Sure. So after the Consumer Bureau led a $185 million enforcement action against Wells Fargo for that fraudulent accounts scandal, it was revealed that the bank's customers had been trying to sue over these fake accounts for years, except because of the arbitration clauses buried in the fine print of the contracts, the customers were forced individually into secret arbitration, and Wells Fargo was able to continue its bad practices for years and years. So these abuses were not able to be revealed until much later. So it really is a way for corporations to hide abuse and not be accountable to the public.
Congress is working on trying to overturn this rule already, and they're using something called the Congressional Review Act. And I guess before we get into that, is there any sort of bipartisan backing for overturning this rule, or is this mainly a Republican-led effort?
This appears to be a Republican-led effort. And the Congressional Review Act is, like you said, it's a tool that Congress can use, that they're using in this instance, to roll back an agency rule. So it's a fast-track process with limited opportunity for debate. It's a simple majority vote. So it's really important that folks who want to support this consumer protection rule are outspoken about it right now, because it's going to come to a vote very soon in the House. We're hearing it could be as soon as Tuesday.
What sort of arguments are being put forward against this ruling, or have any been put forward, or is this just kind of Congress people serving their political backers?
Well, one of the arguments that gets a lot of play is that this rule is just a giveaway to trial lawyers, but in fact, forced arbitration is just a giveaway to Wall Street and to companies that want to rip off their consumers, knowing that consumers have no way to fight back. It's a way to challenge systemic abuse that's going on. So it's not just, you know, rewarding trial lawyers for pursuing class actions. It's enabling these class actions to stop bad practices. And there are also some arguments that say that consumers recover more money in arbitration, but that's been shown to be false. The CFPB did a very comprehensive empirical study of arbitration and found that class actions were a much more powerful way for consumers to get relief.
I've been speaking with Melissa Stegman, the Senior Policy Counsel with the Center for Responsible Lending in Washington, D.C. Melissa, is there anything you'd like to add before we finish up?
Because I'd also like to emphasize the widespread support this rule has among consumers, civil rights, labor, business groups, and also with a lot of military groups. There's a lot of abuse against service members, and forced arbitration clauses have been used against them. So it's really it's a very supported rule, and we need to get our voice out to Congress to say that they should protect this rule.
All right. Melissa Stegman, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much.
For KBOO Evening News in Portland, I'm Sam Bowman.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30. At 6, it's Bread and Roses. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, cool at 63 and partly cloudy. Tomorrow, highs near 88 and a little bit cooler at 84 on Sunday. On this day in history in 1969, Neil Armstrong became the first human to walk on the moon. In 1925, American high school biology teacher John T. Scopes was found guilty of violating Tennessee's Butler Act by teaching evolution in class. And in 356 BC, arsonists destroyed the Temple of Artemis in Ephesus, one of the seven wonders of the world. The quote of the day is from Hemingway: "Every man's life ends the same way. It is only the details of how he lived and how he died that distinguish one man from another."
From our friends at H2O Radio, it's This Week in Water.
Don't mess with these sisters. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
An Oklahoma-based company that is planning to build a natural gas pipeline in Pennsylvania has run into some unexpected opposition. Nuns.
A group of Catholic sisters has set up an open-air chapel complete with pews and an altar directly in the path of the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline, which is planned to cross the land they own.
The order, known as Adorers of the Blood of Christ, has a land ethic that says the earth is a sanctuary, and they are going to work to protect it, according to a spokesperson from the group Lancaster Against Pipelines.
Rewire reports that last Sunday, more than 300 people attended a meeting called Stand with the Sisters at the outdoor chapel.
The nuns have refused to sign a lease, so the company is taking them to court in an effort to seize the land through eminent domain. A hearing is scheduled July 17th.
The proposed pipeline is 183 miles long and costs $3 billion. Environmentalists fear that any leak could damage the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
Duke Energy in North Carolina is seeking a rate increase to clean up pollution that it allegedly caused.
The company is the largest generator of electricity in the country and wants its customers to pay, on average, 15% more, part of which will help cover the cost to clean up coal ash waste.
State regulators and environmentalists say that Duke has allowed coal ash to pollute rivers and drinking water wells.
The ash comes from burning coal and is laced with many toxic chemicals. The Associated Press reports that in 2014, the company was forced to address how it disposes of its byproduct after an accident at a waste pit coated miles of the Dan River with gray sludge.
One homeowner, who has been forced to drink bottled water since chemicals appeared in his neighborhood, likened the situation to a septic company spilling sewage all over his property and sending him a bill to clean it up.
Duke Power denies that it's polluted waters, and it was successful last year in passing the cost of cleanup to ratepayers in South Carolina. The company says that cleanup is a part of the cost of generating electricity.
But Donna Lisenby of Waterkeeper Alliance told EcoWatch that working families struggling to make ends meet should not be forced to pay for Duke's negligent management of leaking coal ash ponds. It may be the first project in the world of its scale. That's what they're calling a program to assess how noise reduction from ships may help killer whales in waters near Vancouver, British Columbia.
More than 30 maritime companies like Carnival and Celebrity Cruise Lines and Maersk Shipping will voluntarily slow their ships when moving toward the Haro Strait to see if it will help killer whales.
The sounds from ship propellers are thought to interfere with the whale's ability to hunt, navigate, and socialize. The slowing will lessen noise underwater.
The shipping industry has worked with the Port of Vancouver for about a year to gain industry support for the speed reduction to 12 miles an hour, now set to occur for 2 months beginning in early August.
Orla Robinson, who is manager of the program, told the Vancouver Sun that they are trying to understand the relationship between slower vessel speeds, underwater noise levels, and the effects on the whales. sales.
They will also see how the speed reduction affects the company's finances and operations. A representative of the Vancouver Aquarium said the underwater noise is one of the principal threats to killer whales who take up summer residence near Vancouver.
It contains twice as much water as used in the United States every year. That's the size of the iceberg that broke off the Larsen C ice shelf in Antarctica last week.
The berg itself may break apart, but could also drift into the South Atlantic Ocean. It's not expected to pose any risk to shipping.
It is not clear that the breakoff was due to global warming. Scientific American reports that the calving of the berg does not signal a change in Antarctica, and it is not the same warming conditions that are occurring at the other pole in the Arctic.
Dan McGrath, a glaciologist at Colorado State University, said that the Antarctic Peninsula is the most rapidly warming region on the continent, but that the calving is natural. However, he added it also was concerning.
Still, climate change cannot be ruled out as a cause of the calving of the Delaware-sized iceberg.
And finally, if you were really, really thirsty, would you slurp out of your dog's water dish?
Well, if you don't wash your water bottle every day, it's probably worse than if you drank straight from Fido's bowl.
That's according to research conducted by the team at Treadmill Reviews. They swabbed a dozen water bottles used by athletes that hadn't been washed in a week and sent samples to an independent lab for testing.
They found that water bottles carried on average, more than 300,000 colony-forming units of bacteria per square centimeter.
That's roughly six times the amount found on pet bowls and just slightly fewer than on a toothbrush sitting unwashed near a toilet.
They tested different kinds of bottles, too. Bottles with squeeze tops, slide tops, screw tops, and straws. Slide tops were the worst, and a bit surprisingly, bottles with straws fared the best.
That may be because water drips to the bottom of the straw rather than sticking around to attract moisture-loving germs. However, those bottles had only slightly less bacteria than the average home toilet seat.
Not all the germs were bad, but some were the kind that can cause skin infections, pneumonia, or even blood poisoning.
So what to do? They're not recommending that you toss your container or switch to bottled water, which would just add to the landfills and deplete groundwater resources.
Instead, just be sure to wash your bottle every day. And in choosing one, stainless steel bottles are naturally antibacterial and don't develop germ-harboring cracks.
We'll put links on our website on how best to clean your water bottle and to those icky findings by Treadmill Review.
Until next time, stay hydrated, my friends.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss your water infrastructure challenges and solutions at WIC 17, October 30th through November 2nd. Find out more at awwa.org/H2O Infocon.
Even the NBA is concerned about the environment. In this edition of Climate Connections, basketball players offer tips for reducing electricity consumption at home.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
I'm out.
In a recent video campaign, six cartoon bobblehead figures of NBA and WNBA All-Stars, like Jason Collins, Dikembe Mutombo, and Swin Cash, call timeout in a street pickup game. While they dribble and spin the ball, they talk about saving energy at home.
So I save money by unplugging electronics when they're not being used.
I block drafts by weatherproofing windows and doors.
And I'll pass on energy-wasting light bulbs and switch to more efficient ones.
It's part of the NBA Green Energy All-Star Campaign, which shares easy energy-saving tips with the NBA's massive fan base. Sarah Espinoza of the National Environmental Education Foundation helped put the campaign together.
People often feel that acting for the environment takes too much time, it's too costly.
She hopes the simple tips in the video show people otherwise.
Really, the biggest thing we wanted to communicate to fans is that small actions add up. You unplugging electronics when not in use, along with all of these other NBA fans, actually has a really big collective impact.
In other words, saving energy is like a basketball game. Every score adds up. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nothing is more inspiring than when people whom the powerful want to keep down rise up. And we, too, will rise. To rise takes more than a moment or even 100 moments. It takes a movement. And you, my brothers and sisters, you are part of that movement.
In a fierce and passionate defense of public education and its central role in American democracy, AFT President Randy Weingarten Thursday blasted efforts to replace public education with private charter schools. Speaking at the American Federation of Teachers Washington, D.C. Teach Conference, Weingarten says the evidence is in and the charter schools experiment has failed.
The moment we're in is the result of an intentional, decades-long campaign to protect the economic and the political power of the few against the rights of the many. Vouchers, tuition tax credits, and private for-profit charter schools do not work. After decades of experiments with voucher programs, the research is clear. They fail most of the children they purportedly are intended to benefit.
Weingarten says the so-called school choice, championed by Trump Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, is not only a failure, but has racist, segregationist roots. She cast teachers and unions as the David against the billionaire corporate Goliaths who want to use your tax dollars to destroy not only public education, but other pillars of our democracy. Weingarten equated destruction of the common public interest to tyranny, and resistance to tyranny and injustice, she says, is vital to democracy. And teachers and labor unions can help empower that resistance in defense of democracy.
If you know that your union can help empower you to make our communities and our world a better place, rise up! Because by resisting injustice and reclaiming the promise of public education for all of our students, we will preserve our democracy. We will protect our most vulnerable. We will strengthen our communities. We will take on Goliath, and we will win!
The Economic Policy Institute says workers 16 to 24 years old have unemployment rates twice as high in the U.S. as workers 25 to 54. Young black workers' jobless rate is 16.3%, twice as high as general youth unemployment. EPI says because young black workers are suffering higher jobless rates, they would especially benefit from tighter labor markets. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
This morning, Israeli soldiers shot and killed a young Palestinian man with a live round to the heart in a town near occupied East Jerusalem. He was the third Palestinian to be killed by Israeli fire within a few hours. The Palestinian Red Crescent has reported that at least 140 Palestinians have been injured today, saying that most of them were shot by the army and several others suffered fractures and bruises after being assaulted by the soldiers. It added that the number of wounded Palestinians is likely larger than 140, especially since the soldiers have chased dozens of medics and ambulances and prevented them from entering various Palestinian towns and neighborhoods. The soldiers also invaded and occupied many Palestinian homes in the Old City, in addition to installing roadblocks in several areas. Another Palestinian man was killed by soldiers during clashes that took place after the army invaded a neighborhood in occupied East Jerusalem as well. Palestinian medical sources have reported that the second slain young man has been identified as 20-year-old Mohammed Hassan Abu Ghanem. Eyewitnesses said that the soldiers surrounded the young Palestinian after shooting him and that he bled to death because the army prevented Palestinian medics from approaching him.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jim Thompson, Sam Bowman, and Jenka Soderberg. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste and Jessica Jackson from Cut 50, who's on a mission to cut the U.S. prison population in half. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the great issues of our time and goes where corporate media fears to tread. At 10, Locus Focus visits with 350 PDX to look at the potential court battle over Portland's fossil fuel infrastructure ban. At 11, it's Disability Awareness and a discussion with Disability Rights Oregon about the looming threats to Medicare. And at 11:30, Voices for the Animals talks to the founder of Climate Healers about his plan that calls for reconnecting to all living things in order to address climate change. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Thank you for listening, and good night. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Ruben. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody.